1 week from the NFL draft, first round anyway, Thursday night, as they throw it in prime time for how many years now? I don't know, but it has become an absolute event. The NFL always figures out a way to make whatever they're doing bigger and better. They're going to play Friday games this week, this year. They're going to play. They're going to play in Brazil. I mean, they continue to just become bigger and bigger. Monopolizing the audience in sports. We've got the NBA playoffs. We've got the Stanley Cup playoffs, early season surprises in Major League Baseball, and two really fun guest segments this week. George Lopez, the hilarious comedian and actor with his NBC show, Lopez versus Lopez.
Every time we laugh about this all week when someone says, who are the guests? You say George Lopez, and they go, wait, George Lopez?
George Lopez.
Yeah, there's only, like, I know there are probably many George Lopez's out there. Mm-hmm. There's only one George Lopez.
What do you see? His hair. And then we talk with Sean and Seamus Evans, the father-son running duo from Galway, about their Boston Marathon experience. First time they ran that race, that historic race, together. Setting a personal record, a really in-depth conversation with Sean and Seamus coming up on the show as well. Let's go.
This is Honorado and Miller, sponsored by Alpen House.
All right, so great to have you with us this week. If you're watching us live stream, it's Thursday nights at 6:30. If you're watching us on TV, check us out on social media, Facebook, YouTube, and X, or just relax on your couch, enjoy the view on a bigger screen. At least half of the view, anyway, on a bigger screen. Saturday nights at 6:30 on Saturday nights at 6 on my 4, Sunday mornings at 6 on News Channel 13. Let's start with the NFL discussion, right? We'll do a little bit of a roll call. I feel like I haven't done that in a while.
Yeah.
Sam, hello, buddy. How are you, man? Good to see you. Sam's Mets are rolling right now. Carol, yeah, good to have you with us as well. So the NFL draft. First round is Thursday night. What do we think the Giants and Jets should do with their picks? Giants at 6, Jets at 10. Realistic that the Giants could sit where they are and still get a top 5 quarterback.
Yep.
I don't know that they'll get a top 4 quarterback without moving up, but do they need to invest a number 6 overall pick in a quarterback? What would you like to see your Giants do?
Listen, because they're giving Daniel Jones the money they're giving him basically no matter what, I would go get either trade out or, for me, I don't want to see them necessarily take a quarterback unless Jaden Daniels somehow falls to 6.
That far, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want Drake May. I don't want J.J. McCarthy.
No.
I think if Jaden, and you know Caleb Williams isn't going to fall, if somehow Jaden Daniels were to fall to the Giants, I would take him. Other than that, I'm taking the top available wide receiver because you're going to have one of the top 3 wide receivers at that position no matter what. You're not going to have Marvin Harrison Jr., but you're most likely going to either have Neighbors from LSU or Roma Dunze from Washington. I'd take either one of those guys.
Yeah, I think Neighbors will be there, and we'll talk about how many quarterbacks end up going in the first round here, at least our prediction anyway. 1, 2, and 3 are going to be quarterbacks. It wouldn't surprise me if, well, the Cardinals at 4 probably go Harrison. If they move out, it could be another quarterback. Like, maybe the Vikings just get really aggressive and go all the way to 4 to get J.J. McCarthy. 5, the Chargers not going to take a quarterback. I don't know if they're going to invest in a receiver there. I can see them moving down and collecting as many picks as they can get or going offensive linemen. So I think you're safe at 6 if you're the Giants. And I'm with you. If I'm Joe Shane, the GM, I would sit at 6 and say, whatever comes to me, I will be happy to take, be it Neighbors or, like you said, a Dunze. Yeah. It's what the Giants need. You're right. They've invested in Daniel Jones. You need to surround him with enough talent to try to win. You've already let Saquon Barkley go. get a dynamic, game-changing wide receiver. Neighbors is certainly that guy.
Because I think even if you decide Jones isn't the guy at the end of next year, you can always draft a quarterback again. And I know people will say like, oh, this is a pretty talented draft. It feels like they say that every year. But I think if you don't do that and you go get a guy like Jaden Daniels, or you take the next guy, J.J. McCarthy, or whoever falls to you, Michael Penix or Bo Nix, whoever you take, now you don't have that dynamic wide receiver, or, and you won't get them until the second or third round, and they're not dynamic anymore. And you probably aren't going to play that guy. Daniel Jones is going to play anyway, most likely. So you're wasting, you know what I mean? You're wasting that pick of a wide receiver to get like a real skill position player and be able to utilize them right now.
And look, unless our answer to the next question is seven, you will have a chance if you're the Giants to be aggressive in the second round to get a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix, right?
If you want to,
So it doesn't have to be a first round quarterback necessarily to give Jones a little bit of competition in camp and to maybe bring a Nix or a Penix along for a year or two to see if they end up being the guy. All right, how are the Jets at 10? Sam says he wants an offensive lineman. And he says there's no question about it.
Yeah.
He wants no lineman.
I think that has to be the play.
This is an offensive tackle rich draft.
And you're not going to get an offensive tackle selected in the first six picks. So, and maybe seven. So by the time you get to nine, I think you're probably going to have your choice of at least one of the top, or 10, excuse me. You're going to have your choice of one of the top three OTs maybe.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got Joe Alt from Notre Dame going to Tennessee at seven. Another guy could slide in there maybe at five, but I'm with you. For the Jets, it's going to be one of two picks. It's going to be an offensive tackle to protect Rodgers
or
whoever that. I think Brock Bowers, the tight end.
Same, yeah. I mean,
you know, they've got Garrett Wilson. Yep. I think they'd say, hey, we need a tight end. Bowers would certainly be that guy. I don't think Rodgers
a pass catcher
would complain about either selection, an offensive tackle or a tight end.
I think
like
his Achilles would like an offensive tackle.
How many quarterbacks are going to go in the first round next Thursday night?
Well, you know, four is
Caleb Williams.
Four is a guarantee.
I think Daniels goes two, Drake May three, J.J. McCarthy will be the fourth guy off the board.
Okay.
More than four? Will Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr.?
So. But Those are two really good quarterbacks, and if you let them go to the second round, they're gonna get sniped by somebody who doesn't necessarily need a quarterback, but wants a really good backup for now, or is playing for the future and the guy who you're gonna sit behind and play later. I think four. I'm with Troy. I think four, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody grabs Penix or Nix later in the first round.
Nix will get picked in the first round.
You're going five.
Yeah, I'm gonna go five. I've been wrong about this before. I was shocked that Will Levis lasted until
the second round last year.
So I could be off here with Bo Nix because maybe teams are just being a little stingier with their evals on quarterbacks. But I will still land on the side that teams get desperate to find the next quarterback. And so Bo Nix will get drafted, I think, in that first round.
I've told you this. I love Michael Penix. I think he's going to be a really good NFL quarterback.
I mean, the pro day he put on and the speed at which he ran I don't know. I'm not sure how teams are poking as many holes in his game as they are.
This is how it happens, though. Like, and nobody knows anything. You know what I mean? Like, Will Levis has not proven anything at this level. He hasn't gotten a true chance yet. But there are plenty of guys who don't live up to it, and plenty of guys who surprise and do better. We act like this is an exact science every year and are surprised when someone like Will Levis falls. Oh, look at that. Dad's on the Cape.
Five. So with whether that's Nix or Penix, but then maybe six teams moving in maybe from the second to the end of the first round to get their guy.
He said he was going to watch tonight.
Okay. Man of his word.
Lived up to it.
Man of his word. All right. So we're four is firm.
Four. I mean, four is a no. That's a slam dunk.
The over-under in Vegas would then be 4.5. And I mean, whether would you take the over or the under is really kind of where they would set the odds.
Four quarterbacks in the top 10.
Easily.
Four in the top seven, maybe. Like, if that happens, then you're probably going to get a fifth or a sixth quarterback taken.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so too. Some sad news here, and this one just out of nowhere took us all by surprise. Former UAlbany D lineman AJ Simon did a pro day, a workout, was an NFL draft prospect, died at the age of 25. Like you said there, Ash, a week before hoping to become a UAlbany guy drafted by an NFL team. You know, Jared Verse will be drafted. Mm-hmm. He's not currently a UAlbany guy, but Simon could have made some history if he were selected in the NFL draft. 25 years old. Incredible. Yeah. Just so sad.
I mean, he's one of the anchors of that UAlbany defense that led them to the greatest season in their history. And he was a huge part of it. That defense was nasty. It was, I mean, I know their offense was good, but that defense did a 180.
Yeah. Right.
Last season. And he was a big reason why.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick time out here on Honorado and Miller. When we come back, still have our performance industrial dirty difficult duns to do. It involves the Masters champ and a little bit of sports gambling. For once, I'm not the one on the show talking about sports betting.
No, you're allowed to do that.
And
you
know,
you're allowed to bet.
And you know how much I enjoy it. And I'm not even the one bringing this up. We'll also talk about Kentucky's head coach. Last week we said, why can't they hire anybody? Very shortly after we said that, they had their guy. And some early season surprises in Major League Baseball. George Lopez, the comedian and actor still to come. Sean and Seamus Evans, that incredible father-son running duo as well. Back right after this.
Make this camping season the best one yet. It's our annual open house event here at Alpenhaus RV. We're offering massive savings on all remaining 2023 inventory. And bring your trade because we're ready to offer top dollar. Browse at your convenience. We'll have every RV open for viewing as well as free food and drinks every Saturday in April. It's your last chance to take advantage of preseason incentives and special interest rates. And if you purchase during our open house event, you'll receive a campfire fun kit. Visit us at alpenhaus.com or come see us in Amsterdam and Saratoga.
At Marcella's Appliance Center, our commitment is to you, providing essential appliances that families depend on for cooking, refrigeration, cleaning, and sanitation, plus appliance repair. You can have peace of mind that Marcella's is here for you today and every day, like we have been since 1957, helping you make the right choice with trusted brands like Whirlpool, Maytag, KitchenAid, and many more. Shop Marcella's Appliance Center in-store, online, or by phone. We're here for you.
And now, back to Honorado and Miller. Sponsored by Alpenhaus.
All right, Ash, shortly after we said, what's wrong with Kentucky? They can't, nobody wants the job.
Well,
they hired their former player, and he was at the time BYU's head coach, Mark Pope. And it's funny, you know, I knew enough about BYU basketball and I knew their head coach was Mark Pope, but until Kentucky hired him and then I started picturing him Kentucky, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember Mark Pope with that 95-96 national championship team coached by Rick Pitino. No, I wouldn't expect you to. But they hire kind of one of their own and probably the best move available, I would think. A guy who knows the program well, got high praise from Rick Pitino, who said, you know, nobody kind of, you know, fits the Kentucky brand quite like Mark Pope, because he's more concerned about the name on the front than the name on the back. So there you go. Can he build a winner at Kentucky?
Can you get players who are more concerned about the name on the front than the name on the back? When you've got NIL money coming out your ears and you're just concerned about getting drafted, I'm not sure anybody's concerned about the name on the front.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Caitlin Clark went number one overall. Shocker. WNBA season just a few weeks away now, almost a month anyway. Drafted by the Indiana Fever. Can she turn that franchise around? I don't know, but she'll turn the attendance around.
For sure.
They were bottom three in the league in overall attendance. They'll sell that place out every night, I would think.
Every night.
Right?
Every night.
Even if they stink, they're going to sell that place out?
For a little while.
Yeah, I think so too. Salaries, here you go. Rookie contract.
Everybody's talking about it.
$76,000. She'll make $338,000 in her first 4 years.
The best part about that is she will make the Indiana Fever $76,000 before she ever takes the court.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to get some nice endorsement deals.
No doubt.
And, so we're not crying for her.
There were people who said, oh, don't leave college. You're gonna make more in college than you will in the WNBA. That's not true. Right. Because the endorsement deals are going to be better and better and better. Mm-hmm. It's not like, yeah, NIL money, I get it. But she's now a grown-up playing in the WNBA. She can sign with anybody on the planet and probably will.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Nobody's going to feel sorry for her once we factor in the endorsement money. But
well, you look at that number
disparity between
and you look
the
at that
WNBA
number and you're like,
and the NBA is.
She might as well have a job like you and me. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, this
go
this,
to work every day and
this number, the 338.056, is a game check for some NBA guys.
100%.
That's what she's going to make in her first 4 years.
Yeah, like, I mean, this is who people keep comparing her to. And Victor Wembanyama, different. It's different. I get it. It's the NBA and the WNBA. Mm-hmm. Victor Wembanyama's contract for 4 years, his first 4 years, is $55 million. She won't make that in the entirety of her playing career. I mean, she won't make that in three times her playing career.
Yeah.
So it's the...
Yeah.
And maybe that'll start to change. We talked about it last week. We talked about kind of the numbers and the ratings. If you're telling advertisers mm-hmm. that the ratings are better mm-hmm. in women's games, guess what? Mm-hmm. Guess where they're going to spend?
Yeah.
On women's games. And guess what? That drives salaries up. When more people are paying attention, more people care, salaries should start to change.
And I think all of Indiana's games are on national television mm-hmm. but one.
Okay.
So look, the people who say pro athletes are overpaid, I understand why you say that, but it's a lazy argument. They're not overpaid. They're paid what the market tells them they should be paid, right? Oh, and professional owners are not losing money.
No.
So even though Steph Curry is going to make 50-something million dollars a year, right. he's making that money because he brings in more than that
right.
to Joe LaCobb, the owner of the Warriors.
Correct.
It is a market-based system.
Right.
If people stopped watching sports and they stopped buying jerseys and they weren't paying $15 for a beer, the players wouldn't make as much.
Yep.
They're not overpaid. They are paid market value. And so until the advertising for the WNBA catches up mm-hmm. and the TV contracts also catch up, we're going to see these.
It's going to take a little bit.
Salaries way down.
It's going to take a little bit. And if you're going to if you are making an owner $1 billion and whatever the time length is, and you're Steph Curry, well, yeah, you have to get a good chunk of that because you're the reason why people are going to Warriors games and you're the reason why that team is winning. So that's why these guys make so much money, is because they're basically taking it from ownership. Of course, you wouldn't want that guy to make $1 million when the owner's making $1 billion. That's, you know what I mean? It's just kind of, it all kind of weighs out.
Arena football, yes, coming back to the Capital Region, the Firebirds. And the Fire Wolves. Could we have made this more confusing? We're really trying to confuse people. We got the Fire Wolves trying to get into a home playoff game situation, and the Fire Birds starting this coming weekend as well. And Sam says he saw the boss at MVP Arena,
Mr. New Jersey.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're from New Jersey. He's from New Jersey. Just bringing it up.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen is impressive.
People are obsessed with him. Like, it's a little weird.
I know.
It's a little weird.
George Lopez, what do you see his hair? Mm. That's all I'm going to say about this guy. He's next on Honorado and Miller.
I'm Jeff Uchlek. I'm owner of Bev's, and we're a beverage center in upstate New York. You're just going to have that wow component when you come in, like, wow, look at this place. It's bright. It's clean. It has everything that I need. Consumer is king. Be able to provide them a friendly environment and a place to shop no matter where they are, whether they're down here in Saratoga or whether they're up in Queensbury. You're always going to get the same experience when you shop at Bev's. At the end of the day, if you walk in these stores, you're going to see a lot of people that have a lot of pride.
It's always a good time there.
It doesn't matter where. It's always a good time there. Doesn't matter.
Play to win a 2024 Chevy Camaro convertible through June 29th. Celebrate 20 years of good times at Saratoga Casino Hotel.
Oh, 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 oh. It's always-
always a good time.
Learn more at SaratogaCasino.com.
Have to try, it's always a good time.
And now, back to Honorado and Miller. Sponsored by Alpenhaus.
I've always said in life, if you aren't funny, don't try to be funny. Some people just don't have to try. When you try, you can tell when somebody's trying too hard. Our guest is one funny dude, and he doesn't even have to try. That's what makes it almost kind of frustrating for the rest of us. It just makes it look so easy, and he's smashing success with everything he does in comedy and acting. George Lopez, of course, I don't know that he's the main star of the show, Lopez versus Lopez, because you might have to give that to his real-life daughter, but he's our guest anyway on Honorado and Miller, the NBC in Albany. George, man, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
Thank you. Good to see you, Chris. I think you're right. I think maybe my daughter's catching me and maybe passing me in these next upcoming seasons.
What about her development as an actress, a writer, a talent surprised you? How early on?
I know that the sitcom format is very difficult for somebody who's never done that before. I did it in my first show, but mine's taken to it really well. She's got a great acting coach. Sometimes the anger in TV is not the anger in real life. The fact that I've seen her angry in real life, and I much prefer the angry Mayan in TV, much softer, kinder.
You just teed me up. And by the way, Lopez versus Lopez, 8 and 8:30 on Tuesday nights on NBC and News Channel 13. You just teed me up for what was really going to be my first question was, if Lopez versus Lopez played out in real life over Mayans, 28 years or so, what would the right score currently be?
Well, I was dormant there for a long time. We weren't talking, but definitely the Mayan as a young woman has, been so intelligent and forgiving and been accepting of me. I mean, the show is a success, I think, in the fact that she's been able to allow me back into her life. We made this, funny show. I think, people are estranged a lot from people that they love, people in their family. And if we are able to put our differences aside, I think it could be a step forward on people that watch the show and really realize that, life is too short to be estranged, I would say.
So with all you've accomplished, hearing you answer it that way, with all you've accomplished, would you call this show your greatest achievement because of the way you've reconnected with your daughter?
I mean, NBC has been really, really great to us as a show and to us. I mean, Mayan's been out there doing publicity, being incredibly well received, but I would say that this would be my crowning achievement, and to be able to share it with someone who I cut her cord, man, at Cedars, 28 years ago. It's beyond whatever my imagination was for myself. Forget about the fact that mine and I get to do this together.
Okay, why does this show specifically work? Season 2, back-to-back episodes on Tuesday nights.
The first season, people liked it. It airs on Peacock. The second season, a lot of guest stars, Cheech and Chong tonight, Marshawn Lynch, Jaime Camille from Jane the Virgin, Brock and Sheena from Vanderpump, Lisa Rinna, Diana Mariva, Michael Irby from Barry and from Mayan. So, shows that get guest stars like that, and it becomes kind of the cool show, the show people watch. And I've watched other people do this show with success, and now I'm seeing how fun it is to be able to do a show that people want to be on.
I was just gonna say, right, people want to watch it, but people now all just want to be on the show, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, man.
My big get would be like Carlos Santana, but that's season 3.
Okay. Hey, a question on Marshawn Lynch, because we do a lot of sports on this particular podcast. Does his green room need extra Skittles? What goes into getting Marshawn hooked?
Marshawn ate all of my peanut M&Ms, took a lot of Boston baked beans with them, and I think maybe his buddies grabbed some of my, I have a rotisserie kind of thing of snacks, took a lot of my chips, but I said, hey, help yourselves. When you say that, usually people don't.
Yeah, but you got to be wary of the ones that are going to take you up on it. Usually it's the relative you don't want around, right? NBC.
Marshawn was absolutely fantastic.
That's great, man. All right, Lopez versus Lopez. And we've said it here.
It's a doubleheader at 8 and 8:30. When is there too much Lopez? Is that such a thing?
You know, I haven't been, you know, I've been the recipient of a lot of attention. I haven't felt it yet, and I know Maya's just started, so not for a few years, though, Chris.
I love it. Look, obviously, the goal of this project is to make it last as long as possible. Is there anything, though, that you haven't done in your career that you still think, maybe I want to try that. Maybe I want to do that.
I mean, I was in Blue Beetle last year. I'd never even imagined myself in a DC movie, and then this DC movie appears. So I would say there's not a lot of things unchecked in my bucket list.
Man, what a beautiful thing to be able to say at this point, right? George, we so appreciate the time, man. Congrats on the success of this show. You see it on your screen right there. Best way to find George on Instagram. Go follow his daughter instead. Why not do that? George, thank you, man. Continued success.
Yeah, it's Chris. Thanks for your time, brother. Appreciate it.
Grab the family and get on the water in style with a Barletta pontoon featuring the power of a Mercury outboard motor. You'll be slicing through the waves with a smoother, quieter ride, leaving you to relax and soak up the sun. Whether you're cruising with a family or tubing and skiing, Barletta and Mercury will give you the best ride on the lake. With their unmatched reliability and refined performance, Barletta and Mercury won't let anything hold you back from having a summer you'll never forget. So don't wait. Stop by Alpenhaus Boats and start your next adventure today. Check out our great selection on Route 30 in Amsterdam and online at alpenhausboats.com.
At Marcella's Appliance Center, our commitment is to you, providing essential appliances that families depend on for cooking, refrigeration, cleaning, and sanitation, plus appliance repair. You can have peace of mind that Marcella's is here for you today and every day, like we have been since 1957, helping you make the right choice with trusted brands like Whirlpool, Maytag, KitchenAid, and many more. Shop Marcella's Appliance Center in-store, online, or by phone. We're here for you.
And now, back to Honorado and Miller, sponsored by Alpenhaus.
George Lopez, you know, it's difficult to do. Ooh, this should have been my dirty difficult done. I wasn't even thinking about it. Look at where I go. It's difficult to do network TV funny now.
Yep.
Really difficult.
100%.
Hands are tied in a lot of ways, but
you have to be creative.
George Lopez finds a way. There you go. Exactly. He sure is creative.
And now, dirty, difficult, and done. Sponsored by Performance Industrial.
Karen and Bill Miller. Man, what a great couple. They own Performance Industrial, where there is never a job that's too dirty or too difficult for their team, Ash, to get it done.
If this segment had a new name this week, it would be called Dirty, Difficult, Dumb. If it wasn't offensive to the Millers, which it shouldn't be, because I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about Jonte Porter. Dirty, difficult, dumb is Jonte Porter, like, because how stupid do you have? Number one, like, you're a professional athlete. Don't bet on your sport. They teach it to you over and over and over. Mm-hmm. But you're basically giving away insider info about your health.
Himself.
And what's the giveaway? Oh, hang on a second. There's an irregular amount and high dollar bets on a reserve center's playing time.
It was like 80 grand.
Who just so happens to go out of two games after like a few minutes each. And there has been massive amounts of money put on the under. You have to try a little harder than that. I mean, dirty, difficult, dumb.
I like that. Dirty, difficult, dumb. We might be able to sell Bill on that, actually.
We could do like stupid criminal type stuff.
I know. Scottie Scheffler is the most difficult beat since peak Tiger Woods. Now, he's not close to peak Tiger Woods. I'm just telling you, he is too darn consistent for guys to show up and beat him consistently. He is just so steady. Mm-hmm. I was saying with a buddy at work, after the first round of the Masters, Scheffler will win this thing because he's not going to blow up on any hole. And what happened with the competition Sunday at the Masters was guys blew up on holes, double, triple bogeys. Scheffler doesn't do that. He has won back-to-back green jackets. Mm-hmm. Two of the last three. Yeah. He's won back-to-back players' championships. He's won two of the last three back-to-back Arnold Palmers, two of the last. I mean, the guy at 27 years old is winning big-time tournaments over and over again, and he's in contention. He finished second at a U.S. Open. He finished second at another major as well. Like, the guy is just too consistent to be beaten easily.
It's hard to believe he only has two majors and that
I know
that's it, but he's won a lot of other tournaments, so it's deceiving.
Yeah, yeah. All right, got to jump out of this segment really quickly. When we come back, the Evans crew, Sean and Seamus Evans, conquered the Boston Marathon in a personal record time. Back right after this.
Bring the vacation experience to your own home with custom-designed Legacy Edition pools. We're confident we can turn your backyard into your own personal oasis, and we'll be by your side through the whole process. Visit our brand new showroom expansion on Route 30 in Amsterdam.
The great thing about novices, no matter who you are, they're going to put all the detail in the world into your brand. I feel like they have been a big part of my success, making me feel comfortable.
This is Harrison Butker, Super Bowl champion kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs. Claim your crown.
And now, back to Honorado and Miller. Sponsored by Alpen House.
The Boston Marathon on Monday was an incredible experience. You go out there knowing you're going to cover this great story, right? Because Sean and Seamus Evans always provide you with such an inspiring angle. Every time you do a story, it's something different. What I didn't expect was a personal record. Sean told us last week, a couple weeks ago now at this point, hadn't really trained much. The last time they even ran together was a turkey trot on Thanksgiving. And so like 3 hours and 20 minutes was probably a decent goal. They had qualified with a 2-hour, 59-minute marathon in Sackett's Harbor. And so I thought, yeah, okay, that's still pretty darn good, yeah, right? Yeah. To go out and put up 2 hours, 55 minutes, and 35 seconds. Not even a full 50 minutes, I think, more than the actual winner. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. They're our guests right now on Honorado and Miller, and we love spending some time with the father-son duo from Galway. Guys, congratulations.
Thanks.
Thanks so much.
I don't think we've stopped smiling as I see us here on your screen. It's been a perma-smile for the last couple of days.
I've had a lot of time to talk with you guys. I will let Ash carry most of this conversation. But Sean, I'm just curious. This is your seventh time running Boston. Seamus, your first. But Dad, this question's for you. Is Boston the most prestigious American race?
For me, it always was. I mean, that was my big goal when I started marathon running 23 years ago. So I thought about that today, that I've been marathon running for half my life now. I turned 46 this year. I started running marathons when I was 23. So 23 years ago, I had my eyes on qualifying for Boston, and that was the big goal. And to make it there, I think for many runners, for many distance runners, is the epitome of success. A lot of people decide to, you know, they want to run Boston once and then they'll retire. You know, like that's the peak of what they want to achieve. So yeah, I would say for that reason, in the history, you know, 128 years, it's talking a couple turns of a century in that time. It's incredible.
Shay, you've done a lot of cool things in your life. I mean, you know, running across America, running the Mississippi, you've been all over the place. I know you had to wait a really long time because you had to be 18. Did it live up to your expectations?
It did. I feel like Boston was the icing on the cake of everything that we've done. My dad has told me about this race for so long. I've tried imagining it, but it just didn't. What I imagined did not live up to the actual hype of race day.
Sean, Seamus calls it the icing on the cake. The problem with Seamus is he's building a multi-tier layer. Cake.
This is better than a wedding cake.
He's been good at that since he was small. You know, add another layer, add another level, and keep dreaming big. And it's been quite a ride that he's taken us on, and he has taken us on the ride. I'm just along and happy to be his leg power.
Even Daisy's proud of you. You know, we talked about this on Monday after the race, that you had kind of never thought that this would be part of your running journey together as a father and son. Boston is what I mean. You know, other marathons, yes, we've talked about how special Boston is in its history. But while this is a bucket list item for a lot of runners, and it's a one and done kind of deal, you guys will run this again, won't you?
Yeah, I definitely am planning on it. Yeah.
Oh, man, how can we not? And, you know, it was much like our run across America, and that you can never top the first. Boston is just a different animal with the crowd that comes out. And you know, you think about some of the things that we've done and the races that we've taken on. Or the adventures that we've taken on with Run Across America and Run Down the Mississippi River. And a lot of those were either just me and Seamus or family adventures. But the Boston Marathon, you're sharing with a community, you're sharing with a state, you're sharing with the community of runners and the community of para athletes. And that's one of the things that makes it so special. And not only are they runners and para athletes, a lot of them are the best of the best of the best. You have to qualify to get into Boston unless you're a charity runner. And then again, you know, there's those philanthropic people that are doing great, great work for so many great causes. You're just amongst some incredible human beings at the Boston Marathon. And that's one of the things that makes it so special. And going into this year, Seamus and I had planned on running next year if it works out with his college schedule. Solely because of the reason that our qualifying time was run in that 2 week window where it qualifies you for both years, 24 and 25. So either way, we were planning on going back.
I was disappointed I couldn't be there, but I did tell him, I was like, listen, this has to be your thing now because I don't do this anymore. So this has to, you would be the other half of the Honorado crew has to go take on the Evans boys. But Shay, you're the we'll call you the pilot because I had your mom and your grandma both texting me saying, Sean's a maniac. He's running 6 minute miles. We're telling Shay to rein him in. Yep. Do you rein him in or do you egg him on?
So, beginning of the race, when the gun fired, we went off fast and I could feel that he was letting his emotions get the best of him, you know, the excitement, the crowd. And so my mom texted me and I saw it and I'm like, Dad, we're going fast. Because I can't really tell how fast we're going. Yeah. I wasn't wearing a watch or anything. And so I told him, we're going pretty fast. We might want to back it off a little bit. So from there, we stuck to the plan of going a little bit slower on the uphills and then cranking it on the downhills. And then doing that, we were able to get our PR.
Seamus was actually reading me the texts from Nicole. And I said, Seamus, tell Dad to save something for Heartbreak Hill. I think that's what it was verbatim.
Yeah.
And it was smart. Nicole knows. She's been there with me. She has seen me suffer through the Newton Hills in my early days of marathon running.
Sean, can you describe for us the difference between as accomplished as you are as a singular runner, what those feelings were like to PR as a solo runner, to what you've experienced, I'll say in the last 9 years, but even just back to Monday, if you want to go most recently, what's the difference in terms of how you feel about your running achievements?
I mean, back then, you know, 20 years ago when I had kind of settled in and figured out how to pace myself a little bit, because in the beginning I didn't know what I was doing then, which is why Nicole was, at least now she can text Seamus. Before, she had no way to get in touch with me on the course to tell me to slow down. You know, I was just chasing times and chasing times, and it it was fun, but it became like a job. You know, I was out there trying to find races where I could PR because of the course. But again, you never know what the weather's going to be. I was trying to find races where I could get some prize money to pay for my expenses. You know, it became less fun for that reason. But since Seamus and I started running races together in 2013, I mean, he was my training partner since he could sit in a jogging chair, and that was, you know, 2007 or whatever, when he was a year old. But when we started running races together in 2013, the whole mindset shifted. You know, Seamus is the athlete. I get to be his legs, and let's go have fun. And sometimes we get wrapped up in it. In Sackett's Harbor, we knew we needed to hit a certain time if we wanted to qualify for Boston. In my mind, at the time that we needed to hit was 3:20. In my mind, Seamus and I had always kind of talked about breaking 3 hours. We had run 3:01 a couple times at the Marine Corps Marathon. I think the first time we did that was 2015. We were really well trained after running across America. But we had never, you know, never, ever broken that. And I had that experience as a solo runner too, at first trying to break 2:40 and then really trying to break 2:30. I think I ran 2:31 four or five times before breaking that barrier. And you think about, you know, Roger Bannister breaking the 4 minute mile, and you get those mental hurdles that you have to get over. And as a solo runner, it seemed, you know, daunting and nearly impossible. With Seamus, I went into the race on Monday, zero expectations at all. I mean, really, I'm not just saying that. We did not expect to run anywhere near 3 hours. It was not my plan. In fact, one of the other duo runners was talking to me before the race, and he's like, "Oh, Sean, what's your plan? What are you guys going to do? Do you want to try and run together a little bit?" And I said, "Well, what pace are you going to run?" And he said, "We're probably going to go out at like 6:30 or 6:45. And I said, "Brendan, I don't think I want to run that fast. I don't think I'm ready for it." Yeah. Seamus and I went out in the first 5K. Our average mile pace was 5:45.
I mean,
I don't.
That guy feel bad.
So you ask what the difference is. I was running by feel. I was running with Seamus, and we were just out for a run, you know. I wasn't breathing heavy. I was just letting my legs do their thing and letting Seamus pull me down the hill. And we were having a blast.
Shay, you got your medal on? Did you wear this to school?
I do. Yep, I did.
Were you like the mayor today?
Yeah, everyone was really thrilled congratulating me, and they even had it on the morning announcements. So that was really cool.
You know, I noticed yesterday was the first time I didn't get a call from the attendance office. They must have known where he was.
They should have had the assembly going with ESPN on, is what they should have done.
Yep,
they should have.
2 hours, 55 minutes, 35 seconds. I kind of jokingly asked, can you run this faster? This is a PR. Can you run it faster? Want to run it faster?
Yeah.
Like, yes, we do.
Had we trained the hills like we did for Sackett's Harbor, there's no doubt, because we were, I'll say crawling. We were going very slow on the uphills. Yep. Simon was tracking us on his BAA app during physics class. And he said, "Dad, I noticed at one point you ran like a 9:06 mile." And he was right. And I looked at my splits. I had no idea, because I wasn't looking at my mile splits. But I went back today and checked. And he said, I was worried that you cramped up or that you started out too fast. And then he said, "But then I noticed your next mile was 6:08. And I figured you were all right." And he was right. So that was Seamus and me sticking to our plan. And I kept repeating it. And Seamus kept encouraging me. I said, "We're going to take the uphills easy. We're going to take the uphills easy." And it's hard, because there are so many people screaming their heads off in those Newton Hills to get you to the top. I just kind of put my head down. And every time I looked up, I smiled at the crowd. And of course, Seamus is beaming the whole time, so they're cheering him on even more. But then when we get to the top, I just shake out my arms and legs a little bit, and then we just let it fly. And that's when Seamus did the work. And that's, I'm not exaggerating, that is why we ran so well yesterday, was Seamus did the work on the downhills, and I just muddled through and you know, tried to run smart on the uphills. And I guess that, you know, if there's an advantage of being a duo team, it's being able to just let my stride fly on the downhills and lean on Seamus and let him carry me. And I think he was happy to do it.
When did you guys know that a PR was realistic? Like, did you guys know kind of like what time you went off? Shay, were you timing it? Like in the last mile, did you think like, well, we're going to PR?
I had no idea. Huh. We started when we were running. I am living in the moment, and with Boston, there's so much to experience. And with other marathons, it feels like 2.5 hours, mm-hmm. Almost 3 hours. And with Boston, I did not feel that. It just went by so fast that I had no idea that we were going the pace we were.
So the other interesting thing is, so Seamus didn't wear a watch. He wore a watch for Sackett's Harbor because, again, we were on pace. And he wore it in bike mode, and I told him what kind of pace we wanted to keep up speed-wise. So he kept giving me great feedback. And, of course, then we had the chair break, and I couldn't even really look at my watch because my arms were down by my knees the whole time. So Seamus was instrumental in getting us qualified for Boston. But the clocks on the Boston course aren't set for the duo teams.
Right.
So if he didn't know exactly the differential between the times that were showing on the clock and the time that we started, he didn't know the time. Yeah. It wasn't until we turned left onto Boylston that I said, Shay, we're going to break 3 hours. I don't think he knew. I had my watch on, which I started about 3 minutes late because we were so wrapped up in the start. So I knew that that my watch was about 2 or 3 minutes shy. So it showed, 2:52 or something when we turned onto Boylston. And I said, we're going to break 3 hours. And we were, savoring every step from there on in.
Did your watch show you top end speed?
I didn't even tell you. I didn't tell Seamus yet. So I downloaded all my stuff from my GPS watch today. I didn't even look at it yesterday. And I know that you had asked me previously, how fast do you guys run? And it showed a 3 minute mile, which is 20 miles per hour. That, we didn't do a 3 minute mile, but at top speed, we hit that pace, which is 20 miles an hour.
That's speeding in a school zone, I think.
Yeah,
that chair drives fast, Shay. We're gonna have to put a brake on that thing for you.
Yeah, and you know what? I never, ever, ever used the brake in a race, but I did. I did on that first downhill coming out of Hopkinton. It is such a steep descent there.
Yep.
And I was maximizing my stride, and I kept saying to myself, I know I'm supposed to go slower, and I didn't want to, but I actually used the brake a little bit there. One of the reasons was Seamus was holding onto his phone still in the middle of a podcast with the Ainsley's Angels guys for the first 3 miles of the race, and I didn't want it to hit a bump or a pothole or something and have him drop his phone at 20 miles an hour. So we reined it in a little bit on those first downhills by hitting the brakes.
Were you live?
No, it wasn't live, but it did release later that day.
Yeah, so they were recording.
You were recording. Yeah. I was.
They were recording so that he could, show the crowds and describe his experience. It was really, really.
That's so cool.
Really neat episode.
Yeah.
Love that.
That's awesome.
You just briefly mentioned it. I'll quickly just go over it for our viewers and listeners here who don't know the story. That when you were qualifying in Sackett's Harbor, the chair broke. So you weren't able to really anchor in the way you normally would, and yet you still went 2:59. But let's shout out some people while we can here. Obviously, I know you guys are so repped by ASICS and all the great things that brand does for Ainsley's Angels and for the two of you. The chair itself, Sean and Seamus, you can speak to it better than Dad even. Who is it made by, and how was it made specifically for you?
So the chair was made by adaptive star, and it was custom made for me. So when I'm racing, I like to be sitting up, so I'm almost sitting in my wheelchair, but with my legs out. Mm-hmm. So I like to be more upright. So they made sure the seat back was adjustable to get me into that position. And leg area is like a cockpit for a pilot. And it has like netting on the sides to reduce air resistance. And it's the one of the best chairs that I have used ever.
So holders, will snack bin.
Yeah, gotta have those.
So the other thing is, though, you know, when they were building that chair, after Seamus outgrew his last chair, I asked them to make it, you know, certain heights for where I like to push. The previous chair that they had built had me up a little higher. I've either been shrinking or just like to run a little more flexed at this point in my running career. So they made adjustable handlebars for me as well. I mean, they really took everything that we both wanted into account when they built us that chair. And they were the ones that built the chair that we used primarily. Out of the three chairs we had, that was the one that we primarily used on the run across America, because it was one for that. It was for the one that Seamus was most comfortable in.
You're just more aerodynamic now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's I just need to lean on Seamus more. Let's be honest.
And Sean, I know Chris. I think Chris had asked you this maybe even off camera at some point, but you know the idea that Seamus was a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, has grown and is growing. He's a man, like he's an 18-year-old man, but the chairs have technology-wise gotten so good. So it's almost like as Seamus has gotten, you know, heavier and bigger, the chairs have gotten more aerodynamic and lighter. So are you probably still pushing about the same weight that you were maybe in your Run Across America? Have they gotten that much better?
Yeah, I mean, the chair that we pushed on the Run Across America was heavier, heavy duty. And that chair was built for you know, endurance, for strength, not for speed. Mm-hmm. It was built to get us 3,200 miles.
Okay.
And that chair was solid. So yes, for that reason, that chair was super heavy. Yeah. We've pushed some lighter chairs, and interestingly enough, the chair that we push now was the first chair of its kind that was built. It's called the Adaptive Star Aero. And the first chair that they built for us, they were trying to trim weight wherever they could. And this was, it was 2020, because it was right after Seamus's surgery. We just had new measurements. His body had changed a lot because he had grown 6 inches overnight from his spinal fusion surgery. So once we had those new measurements, they got to work building us that chair, and they were so excited about making it so light, and they did. But that's also the reason that it probably broke during Sackett's Harbor. Now, that chair lasted us, you know, 3.5 years without issue. But they admitted to me that was the only chair built with the aluminum tubing as thin as it was. And that's what happened. The aluminum tubing actually snapped while we were running up a hill in Sackett's Harbor. So when they sent me the new parts just before the Marine Corps Marathon in October, and they were great. I mean, they got the parts to us. I can't even imagine how they got that, because they're in Washington State and they had them to us within like a week, and that included building it and painting it and everything. But the ones that the new part that they sent was reinforced with a little thicker tubing, and I'm sure it's built to last now. And I obviously didn't notice any difference in weight or anything like that.
Seamus, you're like the pilot of the coolest spaceship going. Like, you've got a running chair you're like, I'm sitting in a cockpit. I can recline. I mean, you got it made, man. Snack drink.
It was crazy. And I didn't tell you this story, Chris, because I didn't know what was going to happen. But Friday, we were getting ready to head out to the Odyssey of the Mind States. The representative from Adaptive Star that coordinates the building, all of the chairs, called me and said, Sean, we're in a panic. One of our duo's chairs was damaged beyond repair flying from Texas to Massachusetts. Can you help us out? Can you get them a chair? So I ran down to the garage and you know, I told her what we had. And she said, okay, I'm gonna put you on standby. We may need you to bring that chair to Boston. It turned out that they ended up finding another chair, but But, you know, that's the kind of thing that can happen. And for that duo to have to, you know, try and figure that out on the spot, that's the kind of stuff that people don't even realize can happen when you're relying on equipment. You know, the same thing can happen with a regular chair. But this duo had been training for years to try and qualify for Boston. They qualified, and he couldn't run the race with the chair that they had been training with. So we were ready to help him out if we needed to. And we do have a fleet of chairs here. If anybody ever does need help like that in our area, but it's, you know, it's just one of those things that can happen, I guess, when you rely on equipment.
They always say, not all heroes wear capes. That's the both of you.
Yeah, no doubt.
Never wearing capes, but you might as well be. You guys are great people.
Yep. Congratulations again. I know there's been so much inspiration to lead you guys to Boston. We will, I promise, detail some of that the next time we're able to chat. Shay, let's see that medal one more time, man.
PR at Boston, 255.35.
Unheard of. A lot of people don't PR at Boston.
Add it to your wall. Like, you guys should have all these achievements. Yeah. Start putting them up on the wall. They're pretty great.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for the access you've given us in between your non-training, but also travel to Syracuse and back and then on to Boston. Thank you. You've given us a front row seat to it all. And it's been a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
It's been a blast for us too. We'll keep you posted on Seamus's next thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Global.
The next layer on the cake, Shay. Get ready to frost it.
I'm Jeff Uglek. I'm owner of Bev's, and we're a beverage center in upstate New York. You're just going to have that wow component when you come in, like, wow, look at this place. It's bright. It's clean. It has everything that I need. Consumer is king. Be able to provide them a friendly environment and a place to shop no matter where they are, whether they're down here in Saratoga or whether they're up in Queensbury, you're always going to get the same experience when you shop at Bev's. At the end of the day, if you walk in your stores, you're going to see a lot of people that have a lot of pride.
It's always a good time there.
Doesn't matter where. It's always a good time there. Doesn't matter.
Play to win a 2024 Chevy Camaro convertible through June 29th. Celebrate 20 years of good times at Saratoga Casino Hotel. Learn more at SaratogaCasino.com.
And now, back to Honorado and Miller. Sponsored by Alpen House.
Really can't get enough of the Evans crew. Incredible what they are able to achieve time and time again, not just as a duo, right, but as a family. Because as we know, when Sean and Seamus ran across America, Nicole was driving that monster of an RV, and Simon was
filling in sometimes in the chair.
Yep, right.
Amazing people.
Yeah,
amazing people. And I said this to Chris. We were joking with Sean after the interview. He said, good. I ate a tube of Reese's Pieces, because we were talking about what we're eating. I ate a whole tube of Reese's Pieces and a bunch of Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you've probably burned about 11,000 calories, right. So I think you can handle that.
Yeah, a lot of us exercise just to kind of maintain and be able to eat whatever we want.
Right.
You know, that is the least of a reward that Sean can get for all the work that he's done. Incredible. Next week will be a lot of fun. The lead man, Ronnie Platt for Kansas, and the host of Cash Cab, Ben Bailey.
Get ready, Ray Hurt.
On Honorado and Miller.